And it's hard to imagine an upside to the opioid addiction and overdose crisis, but there is one. It is a little morbid, but it's tremendously life-affirming. It is that there is a huge increase in organs available for donation because so many young people are dying of overdoses. Last year, 848 organs became available for transplant, all a result of fatal overdoses. Alexandra Glazier is president and CEO of the New England Organ Bank. She joins us in the studio. Alex, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by someone who made the decision to make a donation. Eileen Grugan is a parent. Her son Charles died of an overdose in 2011. And Eileen, do I understand you donated his heart, kidneys, and liver?
Yes, that's correct.
And how many lives were saved?
Three.
Well, Eileen is joining us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. And what a gift, and yet what a loss. I'm imagining it's still very fresh. We're so sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's an honor and a privilege to be here today to talk about the gift of life and also at the same time be talking about the disease of addiction.
Well, the honor's ours. And we understand that his addiction, your son's addiction, started with Percocet, you know, the painkiller everybody gets handed out like candy after dental surgery maybe, but it just grew from there.
Yes, he didn't even really start using drugs until he was out of his senior year in high school. He started experimenting a little bit, and that would be Percocet and, you know, Darvocet, anything like that. And it snowballed completely out of control.
He turned to heroin?
Yes, he did.
As we hear from so many of the families of opioid overdose victims, I mean, they're not a statistic. He was so much more. And we'll direct people to your websites where you're urging others to donate organs. Just looks like full of possibility in life.
Yes, yes, yes. He was youngest of our three children and wonderful, wonderful family. Everyone knew him and loved him and cared about him. He was a wonderful child.
Well, he was giving. I hear stories about how he came home one day barefoot because somebody else needed shoes.
That is correct.
He was a registered organ donor.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
I like to say, I think when Charles probably checked that box off that day, that it was probably just a, oh, this is the type of person I am, so let me just check this off. It's the right thing to do. Never in a million years knowing that. This is what he'd be called to do.
Yeah.
And he was.
Well, now, explain how this works. He has checked off the box, but do you as his family have to give permission?
We did that day in the hospital when they came to us and they took us into a room. It was two doctors, and I believe someone from Gift of Life may have been there on the sidelines. Mm. And at that point, they asked us if we had any thoughts on organ donation. And at that time, when we got the news that he wasn't going to recover, I believe we were all in the state of shock. And when that person or the doctor said, have you thought about donation? It was like the hand of God just reached right through and grabbed us. And my husband and myself and my daughter said at the same exact time, absolutely.
Because what were you thinking?
Charles' disease of addiction had taken him to so many dark, dark places. Charles tried many, many, many times for recovery and did everything in his power. But as my older daughter likes to say, the disease of addiction was just bigger than he was.
More powerful, yeah.
It was just such a wonderful time for us to make his life so purposeful. He had often said that he thought he was capable of wonderful things, but the disease pretty much didn't allow him to do all the things that he was capable of doing. And I often say he had such a sad story with such a happy ending.
Well, this was his chance to do great things, save three lives.
Yes.
Yeah. Alexandra Glazier, again, of the New England Organ Bank.
Yeah, I think, you know, what you've just heard is what we've seen here in New England and certainly reflected nationally as well. It's really this tragedy with an unexpected life-saving legacy, and that's exactly what you just heard. It doesn't lessen the tragedy to any extent, but it really provides something meaningful in saving other lives.
And you're hearing a lot of this.
We are. The trend has been remarkable and startling, just as startling as the epidemic, I suppose. Yeah. So we noticed starting a couple of years ago that there was a trend that the number of organ donors who died of a drug overdose was increasing.
Well, let me give you the numbers that we've seen. In 2010, you had 8 organ donors who died of overdose. In 2015, there were 54.
That's right. So we went from 1 in 20 in 2010 to 1 in 5 in 2015. And at the same time, over that 5-year span, there was an increase in the total number of organ donors as well. So this has really been, as I said, a remarkable trend that's changed the face of organ donation.
And it's happening across the country.
It is. So nationally, there's a similar trend to the point where in 2015, 1 in 10 organ donors nationally had died of an overdose.
Okay. Eileen, I just want to ask Alex some of the practical questions people might have. We think of drug users as people who are destroying their organs. How do you screen that?
Right. So I think that is a common misperception. And in fact, many of these organ donors are young and otherwise healthy, much like you've just heard. So while they have died of an anoxic injury to their brain, their other organs remain viable and suitable for transplant.
And there is a thinking, and Eileen, I don't know if you've heard this too, as you know, you've got an annual run in honor of your son, the Charles Legacy Donor Dash. You've got a website, as we said, working with the Gift of Life Donor Program. This is something you are trying to encourage other families who might find themselves in the horrible position you were in to do. But I'm sure you're aware of these concerns of screening organs from people who've died from addiction. And yet we know that there's thinking that in some cases, doctors say, what does it matter? You know, if it buys somebody some time that wasn't going to have it.
We were pretty much like probably a lot of people thinking, oh my gosh, would this be the wonderful miracle or silver lining that would allow Charles to do everything that he wanted to do? He had been clean for 14 months at the time. And when they walked into the room, they said that everything was in pristine condition and that he had a blood type that actually could be crossed with other blood types. So the expansion was even more those people that he could help.
I think one of the things the system does very well is identify potential organ donors. So hospitals are required to work with the organ bank in their region when there is a potential organ donor. And then that suitability piece that's just been described with testing is performed to make sure that the organ donor is potentially suitable for, or the organs are suitable for transplantation. And then the authorization process can move forward with discussions with the family or if the individual is already registered, as you point out. And in fact, a surprising number of individuals have registered nationally. There's over 126 million. We know that the adult population, the majority, are interested in having this as their legacy.
Alex, as the, you know, we know people die waiting for organ transplants. So as the person who has to see that statistic as well, I'm just wondering if you had anything you wanted to say directly to Eileen.
Oh, I think it's very difficult to come up with words that are appropriate to thank someone for the kind of life-changing gift that they're willing to give. I mean, I think it's incredibly profound that donor families like Eileen can look past their own grief and give life to others. And I feel privileged, really, to be able to work in this field.
And Eileen, have you had a chance to, as sometimes can happen, do you know where Charles's organs went?
They went to 3 men. I have reached out to each of them. We've corresponded back and forth a little bit, as the Gift of Life group can explain. We only know their first names. We don't know where they live, and they do not know, you know, really anything about us. I reached out to the one of the gentlemen who received Charles's kidneys and told him that we would feel it a privilege to meet him. He said that he would like to do that. So we're going to try to go ahead with that and try to make some contact with him.
And I can't imagine that this isn't helping, that this is, you know, somehow.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I don't know how we would have been able to get through this grief as a family, just his siblings and his me and my husband, and also his cousins and aunts and uncles and that are so support this wonderful, wonderful Charles Legacy and the Gift of Life program.
Well, it just so strikes me that you have given this incredible gift to these three men, but they're giving a gift to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. I said it was that day in the hospital. I said, it's sad that it is. It's a win for both people today. It's a win that Charles was able to give his gift. It's also a win that those families are being able to get a second chance and do great things.
Thank you. That's Eileen Gugin. Her son Charles died of an opioid overdose in 2011, and his organs have saved three men. Alexandra Glazier is president and CEO of the New England Organ Bank, and they've seen a huge increase in donations, sadly, because of the opioid epidemic, but they have been life-saving. Eileen, Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll link you to Eileen's online site in honor of her late son and to the Organ Bank at hereandnow.org.